This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Heading into hour number two. Thanks for joining us here on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. Steve Gardner, good from USA Today, is going to preview the ALCS. That starts tonight in Houston, and the NLCS, which will begin on Saturday. One of the issues last night in that baseball game was the check swing and how the decision came about that that check swing was going to end the game. And it was basically this. That was a judgment call on the first base umpire, and it's not reviewable. And this is what I don't understand. And I mean, again, I've been involved in covering sports for a very long time, and I never get a feel for when anybody has replay why certain things aren't reviewable. It's almost like there's a level of human element that these entities, whether it's the NBA or the NHL or the Major League Baseball or even the NFL, that they just want to keep. They just want to hold on to it. They don't want to bog the game down with everything being reviewable. So they just randomly go, this, and this are not reviewable. Because if you just went to a simple video monitor, that check swing wouldn't have held up. Now, I have no idea what would have happened afterwards, and nobody would. But the reality of it is, that is a real stain when you talk about how that game was played last night. I thought it was brilliant. I thought the way the players performed was magnificent. It's a classic game with an unclassic ending, an ending that's going to be talked about for a while, or at least in San Francisco anyway. But again, tell me why these things aren't reviewable. And let us sort this out in a better way. There's got to be some brilliant minds that can come together in all of these leagues to say, you know, we're not going to leave anything up to chance. We don't want everything reviewable, but let's be realistic and let's be smart about this, because we don't want to have these things marred. You know, the NFL did try to do this at one point with pass interference. It didn't work out. I don't know if it will work for baseball if check swings in the second inning of a game in July are going to be reviewed by videotape. But as if it's going to be the final out of a deciding game five, why can't we just have a provision that occasionally we just take a look at the monitor just to make sure? All right, it's Wake Up Call. We come back. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue on Sports Map Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb Friday edition. We get you to the weekend on the high note, the low note, and the what note. All right, what's the good of the day?
Well, it is October, right?
Of course.
And if you drive around your neighborhood, you're going to start seeing, you know, people decorating their houses.
That's right.
And as well they should. The good of the day is Myles Garrett has gone and decorated his house as well for Halloween. He's gotten into the spirit.
Has he really?
Yes. In his front yard, you will find a whole bunch of tombstones with the quarterback's name, number, and helmet of the team they play for, the quarterbacks he's facing this year. And
oh,
yes, Tony,
cool.
Our quarterbacks are on his, are
yeah,
in his front yard.
Absolutely. Does he have any, like, spooky ghosts or witches goblins out in his yard, too?
You can tell he has a brand new house because there's a tiny little tree in the front yard.
Yeah,
I mean, a big
okay.
house, obviously, a big
right,
yard.
Sure.
I think I did see maybe there's something hanging from the yard, but it's just littered with these tombstones. Nice looking tombstones, too. You know, here lies number 7.
Oh, like he went all out. He didn't get them cheaply made.
No. Yeah. These aren't those styrofoam ones you get at the Dollar Tree.
Oh, very good for him.
These are ones that, you know, for him, he's probably sitting there going, you know, especially with Roethlisberger and Burrow and Jackson, he can use those every single year.
Well, absolutely. And you know what?
Well,
good
maybe not
him.
Roethlisberger too much longer.
Well, you know, but good for him for having this little nice decor.
Yeah. That's how you decorate.
I kind of want, I always like having stuff in our house. We don't have a lot of stuff in our yard for Halloween. I always see people like, they put up inflatables and they've got a bunch of things and hanging from the trees. And I kind of want to do that.
Yeah, we kind of did like a little, almost looks like a mini seance around a tree with some ghouls and goblins, zombie looking thing, or I don't know what the heck they are. But I mean, it looks, you know, it's there.
Yep.
And lights.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. I know my wife would have one light yellow, orange, I mean, and one light purple. And I said, do you want to do that this year? He goes, no. I go, wow, what's wrong? Something you normally would jump right out of the opportunity to have the lights out there. So
just not appreciate. See, we did this. We have like these spotlights that we use for Halloween and for Christmas to kind of decorate, you know, just shine like a purple hue over the house or a green hue over the house. We put those in the front yard and we haven't turned them on.
Yeah.
Like we turned them on like one time or a couple times.
Heading down to the stretch run, 2 weeks to Halloween this weekend.
I better turn them on.
There you go. All right. What's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day. Okay. I'm going to preface it saying this way. The idea is fantastic and is needed. Okay?
All right.
The timing is what's bad.
Okay.
And this involves the Washington football team announcing, 2 days ago now? Maybe yesterday? I think it was yesterday they announced that they're going to retire Sean Taylor's number in a ceremony this weekend.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I thought they had already done that.
Well, I think they have him in the Ring of Honor, but this is retiring the jersey number so nobody will ever be able to wear 21 again.
Okay. Again, I thought they had already done it.
So
let me ask this. Why wouldn't you do that when you put a player in your Ring of Honor?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it seems like it goes hand in hand.
But I guess it's because there's just so many numbers. Like, you know, Michael Irvin and Drew Pearson are in the Cowboys Ring of Honor. And I guess you couldn't get rid of 88, right?
I guess, or it's true.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess you can. Tom Landry's hat's retired, so no one can ever wear Landry's hat again. No, I'm with you. I understand.
I understand that not everybody in the Ring of Honor should have their number. What I'm getting at is this. Not everybody in the Ring of Honor should have their number retired. But if you are going to retire a number, why aren't you doing it at the time you're putting him in your Ring of Honor?
True.
And given his tragic circumstance, I thought you would make it a big moment in honoring him when you put him in the Ring of Honor that his number would also be retired.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, why wouldn't this be like a planned event?
Yeah.
Like months in advance, like you knew that this day was coming.
That's right.
And you're doing it on a week when you are the spotlight of controversy.
Of course. Yeah, that's a good point. Because here in Nashville, we knew about this Bum Phillips thing for months.
There's been controversy surrounding
it. Because as soon as they announced it, it was controversial. But yeah, you're right. All of a sudden now the Washington football team is doing something to honor the late Sean Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, during the time where, you know, one man was fired because of, and I'm going to say fired. I know Gruden resigned, but if he didn't resign, he was going to be fired.
Yeah.
You know, but during that week where it's involved emails around your team. So is it the kind of like distraction? Like, don't look at the emails. Look at Sean Taylor. We're retiring his number. Look at that. Look how great we are.
Yeah. No, it's good. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
We'll see how the media processes all of that without disrespecting the late Sean Taylor.
Oh, I'm certain that they're going to blast him.
They should. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is that, you know, maybe it's not dumb, but we may have found the real life Bill Harding.
Okay.
Do you remember Bill Harding?
The name is very familiar.
It should be. It's Bill Paxton's character in Twister.
Yes. It was Bill Harding. Yeah, yeah, okay.
And anytime, you know, we can bring up Twister, we will.
Of course we will.
Anyways, this man is he's an Oklahoma man, just like Bill Harding. He has an idea that if his town's siren goes down, he has a backup plan. And this is him playing the trumpet for if his town siren goes down. That's how he's going to warn his town when a tornado is coming.
So if I'm 5 miles away, I'm going to be able to hear that?
I don't think so. What I'm picturing is, and that's why I'm saying he's like a real-life Bill Harding, I believe that he will be walking right up to the tornado and walking alongside the tornado to warn people.
That's
or maybe
right.
Just ahead of it. Because that's what Bill Harding would have done.
Yeah, of course, but you started this story by saying we may have found a real Bill Harding.
I'm thinking we may have. I believe Bill Harding didn't play
a trumpet in the movie.
No, he didn't play a trumpet.
Does he have other characteristics that make us think that he knows what a storm is thinking?
Yeah, he
Do we know anything about that?
No, I don't have that info on you.
Okay. Because to compare a random guy who blows a trumpet to the great Bill Harding in Twister, who knows what a storm is thinking, you got to give me more than that he plays the trumpet, right?
Well, I know he's not doing it for the money.
He walked up to the Twister and said, "Have a drink." And he chucked the bottle into the Twister and it didn't hit the ground. That's Bill Harding. That's what I want to know. That's the guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
you know what? He never saw an F5. This is only one of us that saw the finger of God. That was Joe. So, God, I love that movie.
It's
when
great.
Jamie Gertz goes, "I can't do this." It's like my favorite moment. She's like, "Honey, I'm out of this relationship. Bye-bye. Goodbye. Bye-bye. I'm out of here. I am not doing this with you." Holy cow.
It's the whole, the other thing's like, you know, you really literally chase tornadoes. I thought that was a metaphor.
Metaphor, right, exactly. Oh, my goodness, that movie. Golly.
I mean, why is it so good? That's all I
I don't know what it is. I don't know. I do not know why it's so good. I watch it all the time.
Anytime.
Watch it all the time. It's got some of the cheesiest dialogue I have ever heard in any movie. I wonder if the actor's like, "Can we change this script? I cannot read this."
Yeah, like,
you know, like what, like Harrison Ford did with George Lucas. Like, "I'm not reading this."
Yeah.
God, this is bad.
Well, what I hope is that they all got together. They read the script. And they got together and go, "Hey guys, writers, director, this movie's a little too serious. You're
right.
Trying too hard to almost make it, because in a weird way, it's kind of, it feels like it's supposed to be a horror movie."
Right, right.
And the tornado is the Michael Myers of this film.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's like, you know, but you can have a lot more fun if we almost go like B-rated science fiction fanfare type of movie and just, you know, almost make a mockery of it.
And
keep it serious, but make a mockery of it.
How great was Aunt Meg?
Oh, my God.
They showed up to her house, and she gave them steak and eggs.
Yeah.
She made them all steak and eggs in that movie. I love it.
I mean, where'd you get all that beef, Meg?
Yeah. See any cows?
No.
It's awesome. Awesome.
And I just love the fact, I mean, you know, everyone's allowed to take a shower in her house. I mean, you know, she's got that kind of time. And
see, man, I live in an area that has a tornado siren, and it goes off on the first Saturday of every month. And you know what it is? It is the reminder of the town that we live in a tornado area that reminds you that we have a tornado siren. That's what it reminds me of every Saturday. Like, some days I'm just going outside on a Saturday night and I hear it and I go, "I live in a town that has a tornado siren. I get it. Okay. I now, yeah, all right. I totally forgot. But yes, I do. I live in a town that reminds me every month that there are tornadoes that could be coming, and this is what you want to listen to."
See, I think I live in a town that has tornado sirens or used to have tornado sirens, because the structures are still there.
Yeah.
Like, you drive around, I mean, you can see what the siren looks like. They never work. They never use them. But when I lived in Hawaii, we did have the tsunami siren go from time to time.
Yeah.
And that was a constant reminder too. Like you said, like, yeah, when that thing wails, I better make sure that I'm in high ground.
Years
that I'm not
ago,
down on the seabed.
Years ago, I was driving one night, and it was a real thunderstorm. And I wasn't that far from home. I was only about 2 miles from home. But I heard the siren go off. And I was in my car. And I was like, "Oh, no. Oh, no." I had to get home. And I got home. Nothing happened. But I was, you know, I'm in the car. I'm like, "Oh, my God, I saw Twister. These things would just be, I could be lifted up and transported to the next county."
Or you could just slide, you know, side to side on a bridge, get spun around a couple times, and then you can jump out and hug your ex.
That's right. That is
in front
right.
of your current girlfriend.
Current your girlfriend.
Or
exactly.
fiance.
I love it. Jamie Gertz, I got your back. I'm glad you
got
out
a raw
of that
deal.
Relationship. You got a raw deal. She got the rawest deal of them all. And by the way, real quick, I know I'm on my Twister rant now, so I just might as well keep
just
going.
Just going.
Right?
Just go.
By the way,
that's why I brought the story up, really. It's just so we can talk Twister on a Friday.
Bill should be ashamed of himself. He took her into an unprepared person into a very, very dangerous situation.
Yeah.
He should have said to her, "Honey, I'm going to go do this very, very dangerous thing with a bunch of people that really know what to do in a very dangerous thing. You don't. So why don't you go as far away from me as possible, and I'll meet you up in a couple of days. But no, he was like, get in with Dusty. Was he thinking?
I mean, almost immediately.
I'm going to go with my ex. You go with Dusty.
Is there not a more perfect scene than, when they're having it out, just as, trying to pick up the pieces of Dorothy, and she and Jamie Gertz is hearing everything on the radio with the umbrella that's like upside down, falling apart.
She did nothing wrong.
And Dusty's just standing there. I mean, Dusty's doing the umbrella flex for her. He's just holding the umbrella for her like, God, you shouldn't be listening to this.
I love when we talk Twister, man. I don't know why we do it, but we've done it. We do it every time we bring up Twister.
Yeah, the only problem I have with the movie is that it never made sense when they went through the house.
Yeah, that's true.
That he started on the ground floor, kind of went up the stairs and ended out the house, but the house was sideways the entire time, almost upside down.
I never understand why Jonah was the villain. Right? He was trying to do the exact same thing they were.
Yeah.
Right? In the end, I don't care. Like, if I'm a citizen, I don't care if he's making money, not making money, in it for the money, not the science. If he can give me a system that gets me 15 minutes to safety, I don't care if he's a trillionaire. Are you kidding me? God bless you. And yet he was the villain that died, and they were like, we were supposed to be happy about it.
Yeah.
Oh, the good people are going to have their technology advance now. I couldn't have cared less which one of those groups created the safety mechanism, right?
Very true. I mean,
if you want Jonah to be the villain, have him create a tornado machine that he can conjure them up at various times.
And he lost control of it.
Right, he lost control of it. And that's why they have to go chase the tornado, because he lost control of his tornado-making machine. With my machine, I will rule the world. That's what I'm talking about.
Because you're in it for the money, not the science.
Not the science. And I say that all the time. I say that all the time in my house.
I dropped that one and also Jeff Goldblum's.
Oh, yeah, from Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You were preoccupied if you could. You never stopped to think if you should.
That's right. Slam on the table. And you package it. You slap it back. God. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue with the wake-up call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with the Wake Up Call. Steve Gardner is going to join us coming up in 10 minutes. We're going to talk to him about the Major League Baseball playoffs. Why not? Hey, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to your curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, why not? Let's continue this. Why not? You and I were off the air talking about disaster movies because we went on that Twister rant.
Yep.
There was a period of time in the 90s where that seemed all Hollywood was doing.
That's all they wanted to do.
That's all they wanted to do was these big budget CGI. It's like, I don't know when CGI really came in, but it's almost like it was like the new toy and everyone was like, what can we do with this?
Now,
asteroids, volcanoes, Twisters.
I will tell you this, with Dante's Peak, that some of it was CGI, but I remember where I grew up in the San Fernando Valley.
Mm-hmm.
There's an airport there called Van Nuys Airport, right? It's one of the busiest private airports in the world, because that's where all the celebrities fly in and out of. So you have these Lear jets taking off, landing all the time. It's, because it's the gateway to Hollywood. I'm bringing this up and that airport up because on one of the parking areas, where I don't know what to call it, the tarmac areas.
Right.
They had the full scale. They were filming Dante's Peak there.
Oh, no kidding.
So they had the scene with the mountain in the background and the you remember when the freeway bridge gets blown away?
Yeah.
That was filmed there in just smaller scale.
Oh, no kidding.
So we would go there all the time and you'd see all these toy cars and the bridge. You got the volcano in the background and that's how it was filmed. It was filmed outside to, make it look like it was blown up, and then they just superimpose it on a film.
They did
there was a period of time from like the mid-90s up to the 2000s where you got Independence Day,
yep.
you got Deep Impact, you had Armageddon, you had Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones, you had Dante's Peaks with Pierce Brosnan, you had Twister. Am I missing any of that sort of genre, that sort of era?
I'm certain there's another.
You know, and that was a pretty good run of disaster movies. I remember, I don't know how many of you guys out there were old enough to remember, the first time I saw the trailer for Independence Day, my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't wait to go see that movie.
Yeah.
They were blowing up iconic. That was something we didn't really see a lot of in terms of movies. Like they didn't blow up the White House. You know, like you would make a movie where America would triumph. Right. But they didn't blow up the White House or the Empire State Building or anything like that. And then this movie was coming out and I'm like, they're blowing up everything. Oh, my God. Everyone's dying. And same thing with like Dante's Peak. I mean, I don't want to say I learned a lesson about a volcano during a Hollywood movie, but I learned a bit about volcanoes during that holiday. No, you know what I mean?
And basically,
like I never lived near a volcano, and I was like, how does when a volcano erupts, what is it like? What happens? Right? I remember when I was a kid, St. Helens blew.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, what exactly happens with a volcano?
That's what I was going to bring up. I mean, Dante's Peak's kind of like the biography of Mount St. Helens.
Yeah, right.
You know, right. It's just, yes, it produces lava, but it's not all about just the lava. That was the first time you learned about, like, that volcanic ash cloud.
Yeah, because you grow up, you learn about Pompeii, right? Yeah. Mount Vesuvius.
You know, it's
and
what
whatnot.
Killed the dinosaurs. Yeah. You know, they melted in lava and blah, blah, blah.
And you're like, you're watching this movie, and you're like, that cloud is going to. It just engulfs the town. It burns everything. It's just, it was great.
Well, ScreenRant.com has a ranking of the 10 best disaster movies of the 90s.
Oh, okay.
Number 10, Volcano. 9 is Dante's Peak. Too low for both of those, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know. Number 8 is Backdraft.
Backdraft is a disaster movie?
I guess so. I mean, it's fire.
I wouldn't call it that. It was arson, though.
It was arson.
Like the guy who was in the... In the firehouse, he planted all of those fires to hurt
Scott Glenn.
Yeah, Scott Glenn.
when he plays a good guy in a movie, I have a hard time believing it.
Yeah.
Because he was so good.
I liked the name. Who's Goldie Hawn's husband? Kurt Russell.
Oh, Kurt Russell.
Yeah, I like roll the pose, Proby.
Yeah.
Says that to his brother.
And his brother's like getting down on what's her name?
Yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah. God, she was hot in that movie.
She was great.
Number 7 and 6 are, you know, similar movies again. Deep Impact, Armageddon.
Yeah, one's crazy. One is a little bit more realistic. The other one's just insane fun.
Yeah.
But still, and you know what? Steve Buscemi in Armageddon, when he goes, we shouldn't even be here.
What are you talking about, man? I had a great
I think
spot
it was Steve Buscemi. It might have been the other guy. One of them said.
No, Steve Buscemi.
Was it Steve Buscemi that said, we shouldn't even be
here? Yeah, that was
him. Yeah. That was great. I haven't seen that movie.
My favorite line, though, is, you know, the Russian guy. Russian parts, American parts, all made in Taiwan.
Yeah. They sent drillers up to drill a hole in an asteroid.
Number 5 is Outbreak, which I don't see as a disaster movie.
Yeah, that was...
Now, especially now, it's too real life.
That was Donald Sutherland, Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had the monkey, and they quarantined. The end of the climax of the movie is that they wanted to blow up this entire town. They wanted to kill everybody that was quarantined in this town, and they convinced him. They convinced the young Air Force guy not to do it.
Number 4, Independence Day.
Now, why not?
That's
right?
Number 3, Titanic.
Okay, yeah, that's
I think
pretty,
that's what
that was. You know what? That was probably the biggest one of the year.
Well, that one ended the disaster movie genre.
Right.
I think it was like once it hit that, I was like, forget it. Number 2, Apollo 13.
Again,
that's more of a biography. It's not really a disaster.
That was not only more of a biography, and that was a feel good, great look at what NASA can do. Yeah. Holy cow, the geeks won the day, man!
And the number 1 disaster movie of the 90s is.
Uh-huh.
Twister!
The show's favorite.
It's the only reason why I brought this article up, because they got it right.
That's right. They did get it right. All right. Steve Gardner next as we preview the ALCS and the NLCS. We'll continue with the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, with last night's game number five, we're heading into the American League and National League Championship Series. American League tonight, National League starts on Saturday in Atlanta. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Steve Gardner, USA Today, to help us talk some baseball. How are you, my friend? Oh, all right, we got you. How are you, Steve?
Hello.
Oh,
hey,
how are
Tony,
you?
How are you?
Good, man. I've been saying it all month, and when baseball in October, when it's at its best, there's really nothing more intense. I thought last night, despite it being kind of marred at the end with that call, I thought it was a masterful game. I don't get to watch a lot of the regular season games out west. I was blown away by Logan Webb. Your thoughts on the game last night, how it was played, and including the controversial call at the end?
Well, I think, you know, it starts kind of controversially with the Dodgers going with an opener. And, you know, it's one of those where you've got a game five, it's winner take all, and every card is on the table. I mean, where the Dodgers felt like they could get a little bit of an edge by starting, you know, a reliever and then bringing Julio Urias in. That was some interesting strategy to start. It was a well-played game throughout, lots of highlights, and then, you know, just the clutch hit from Cody Bellinger, again, who was so bad. And that's what the postseason is about, too, Tony, is you've got guys who are horrible during the regular season but can redeem themselves with a clutch hit here, there. And Cody Bellinger has done that. He's the Mr. Vampire here in the postseason. And then, yeah, with the call at the end, check swing or not, you know, Wilmer Flores, I don't think, has a hit. They said has not had a hit off Max Scherzer in his entire career, so it probably would not have changed the outcome. But to have it end on a check swing is like the most unsatisfying way to have these two titans, you know, end their epic rivalry here this season.
We see starting pitchers come into games in playoffs all the time. What is it like, though? What is the difference between a guy that goes into a start, goes through the order, you know, starts, rather than coming into a game that's already kind of been warmed up for him?
Well, for Urias, you know, he's been doing that for a while. I mean, he's no stranger to coming in. In fact, you only have to go back to last year's playoffs, you know, when he pitched the final 2 1/3 innings of game six and closed out the Rays to win the series. So, at least for him, I don't think there was any problem coming in the third inning of this game. For Max Scherzer, on the other hand, that's something that's a little different. And I think because Max is the way that he is and the way that he's wired, you figure that he could, you know, handle that sort of situation fairly well. The only thing, though, remember, you go back to the 2017 NLDS, when Dusty Baker brought him in to that series in the winner-take-all game five in the middle of that, and he had one of the worst innings of his career.
Yeah.
The Chicago Cubs ended up getting like four runs, two of them earned. It was just one of the weirdest innings I think I've ever seen, and they ended up losing that game. So that was in the back of my mind when he came in last night. But again, Scherzer was fantastic. I think just the adrenaline could carry him in that type of situation. But it is difficult for some, that's for sure.
Given the stage, and we see this a lot in all sports, given the stage, the national attention, just the fact that it was a game five of a playoff, we kind of get in a little hyperbole with performances. But Logan Webb's future, I saw Marcus Stroman put out a tweet that said he's going to be a top five pitcher in Major League Baseball. Do you feel the same way? I loved his performance. I don't know a lot about him, but does he have superstar written on him?
Well, I don't know. You know, he reminds me a little bit of Shane Bieber in that, you know, coming through the minor leagues and starting his Major League career, he doesn't really overpower you. But yet, you know, he gets the strikeouts. He's very, very good with his command and his control. And we saw that throughout the playoffs, especially, I think, for maybe the first time for a lot of people. I mean, he can just put the ball exactly where he wants it. and he can keep the other team off balance. And I think, you know, that's how you can survive and thrive if you don't have 98-mile-per-hour fastball, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that's what the interesting part about Logan Webb is that he doesn't need to blow you away to make you look foolish. And because of that, because of the ballpark that he pitches in, I think he's got certainly a very, very bright future.
All right, one more thought before we get to the previews of these series. San Francisco, a lot of people didn't know that they would be a team like this with 107 wins. What is their future? Did they just catch lightning in a bottle and we going back to sort of going, what are they? Or are they capable of being back into this year after year? What's their situation with rosters and how they're put together?
Well, I think we saw a little bit of a glimpse of this last year when they overachieved from what a lot of people expected out of them. And then, you know, just with the way that they approach the game as an organization, I think it shows Gabe Kapler has done a fantastic job. You have to think that we're done, or we should be, as analysts, done underestimating the Giants after what they did, especially this season, with the best record in baseball and everything else. I think the question that we will still have going into spring training is, you know, is the personnel good enough to do this? And every indication, it seems like, you know, they have the same sort of qualities that I think that the Tampa Bay Rays do. I mean, Gabe Kapler likes to platoon guys. You know, can they? The one question I think I have with them repeating is they were so good and have been so good in the clutch this season. I mean, led the major leagues in pinch hit home runs. I mean, every time there was a clutch at bat, they seemed to come through. And, you know, is that a repeatable skill? Is Buster Posey going to have another great year like he did at age 35? Is Evan Longoria, you know, that sort of thing? I think there are a lot of questions there. And while Logan Webb may not be one of them, I think they're probably still going to have to prove themselves to some degree next year. You know, Camilo Duvall came in, was fantastic. Is he part of the future? Who knows? But this is a very interesting team and certainly a very good one this year that has the potential to do similar good things next year.
All right, so let's get to the NLCS with the Dodgers from last night. They'll go to Atlanta for games 1 and 2. How does this series shake out? How do the Braves match up with the Dodgers?
Well, I think one of the things, if the Braves could have scripted the Dodgers-Giants series, they would have done it exactly the way that it turned out. Maybe a few more innings in game 5 last night. But, the Braves finishing up early, it gives them time to set their rotation and maybe catch a little bit less of a full Dodgers squad than they may have otherwise. But yeah, this is interesting because the Braves come into the postseason or came into the postseason with the fewest wins of any team in the playoffs, including the wild card teams. And yet it was a much better team in September and October than it was earlier in the season. So you see the Braves with the pitching staff that actually outpitched Milwaukee, which I think going into that series, we probably wouldn't have expected. So it's a team that certainly is capable of jumping up and biting the Dodgers and knocking them off. That said, I still think the Dodgers have to be considered the favorite because of the talent they have up and down the lineup, throughout the pitching staff, throughout the bullpen. It just, to me, the Dodgers are so complete, and I felt like they were the team to beat even as the wild card team coming into the playoffs. But this has the makings of a very interesting season or a very interesting series, and one that I think really legitimately could go either way.
Let's go to the Red Sox and the Astros. It starts tonight. And for the Red Sox, yeah, it's been a sort of a surprise, but now they're here. I looked at Ron and I were just talking about this. The Astros roster, Yuli Gurriel's batting like sixth, and he was a former batting champ. I mean, it's crazy. Like, how good this team is built. But this Red Sox team, we've seen the Red Sox organization be really dominant going into the playoffs, and now we're seeing them where they were kind of a surprise, catching people a little off. But now that they're not that much, now that they're not, we've now seen them, what do you make of the ALCS?
Well, I think, number one, it's going to be fascinating from a storyline standpoint, and I don't think Major League Baseball can lose no matter which team advances, because you know the Astros are an interesting story, as we say. I still don't think people have forgiven them for the cheating scandal, but with the Red Sox, I think this is a team. You know, with Alex Cora, who has proven to be a very, very good postseason manager, very good at managing the pitching staff, bringing people in and putting them in the position to succeed. You know, it's a team without, you know, I don't see a whole lot of holes. And coming out of the American League East, you know, they did not win the division, but yet they're a very strong team and had been a very strong team for a good portion of the season before kind of slowing down a little bit. Maybe the bullpen is a little bit of a weak spot. And if you can get past, you know, Nathan Eovaldi and maybe Eduardo Rodriguez and who knows what Chris Sale has to give, I think maybe that's where this series will be won and lost, is can Boston's pitching manage to, you know, hold down that relentless Astros attack that led the majors in on base percentage and everything else, you know, pretty much, you know, all of those hitting categories that you really need to thrive in the postseason. Can they do that? That's what I'm going to be most interested in.
Steve, always good talking to you, my friend. We'll definitely be catching up with you as soon as these playoffs start winding down and getting closer to the World Series. Appreciate it as always, my man.
Excellent. Take care.
You got it. Steve Gardner, USA Today. Catch his stuff there. It's really great. If you're loving this October, stuff is really good. Progressive Guest Line, quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com as we continue with Hour 2 of Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up in hour number three, we're going to go over all the games in the NFL. We got some bye weeks this week, all right? So we're into that now. Boo!
Last games,
terrible. We're going to give you the top games to watch, the middle of the road games, and the games you can avoid and do chores or go out to dinner or whatever if it's your only option on television. So last night, Tampa Bay beating Philadelphia 28-22. And Tom Brady threw two touchdowns. Leonard Fournette ran for two more. And now the Buccaneers sitting at 5-1 on the season. Comfortable.
Of course they are.
Of course they are. God, this, by the way, this book, It's Better to Be Feared, that Seth Wickersham has written about the Patriots. I read an excerpt of that. Sorry, I'm getting all tongue-tied. Oh, it's pretty good. It's pretty well-written if you like these kind of books. I like these kind of sports books where they really dive into something and you're like, oh, I want to get the inside story on that. It seems like I like Jeff Perlman's books, for example. He wrote Showtime on the Lakers. He wrote about the Mets of the 80s, of the 1980s. He wrote Love Me, Hate Me on Barry Bonds. He wrote the Walter Payton book that got him into some trouble. Remember that? Where he kind of talked about Walter Payton and people were like, why are you talking bad about Walter Payton? He's like, I'm not, but I'm giving you
full story.
Yeah, I think people's beef with him was when he talked about how upset Walter Payton was with not getting a Super Bowl touchdown. He was really angry. And I think people didn't like the image in their head of a celebratory Bears locker room and a sulking Walter Payton that he didn't score. Right? Like they were like, no, I don't want my Walter Payton to be that. I want my Walter Payton to be celebrating, and it wouldn't have mattered to him. He just glad to win a Super Bowl. Perlman's book shed light on that it did matter to him. He did not like that Refrigerator Perry got a Super Bowl touchdown and that he, one of the greatest runners of all time, did not. And Mike Ditka even said to this day regrets that. Yeah, why did they? I know you get caught up in the moment. And
I think that's what it was. I think it was caught up in the moment and probably thought, you know, the way they were playing, oh, we'll get to that spot again.
We'll give them a chance. Yeah.
Their offense slowed down the second half, right?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. So it was one of those, I think, situations where it was like, you know, if we drive down and we get it down to like the 1 or 2 yard line, we'll hand it off to him again.
Yeah.
And that opportunity never came.
His Love Me, Hate Me book on Barry Bonds came at the same time that the two writers in San Francisco wrote Game of Shadows. So there was like this time of Barry Bonds steroid books that were competing. And his was a little bit more Bonds-oriented, where the Game of Shadows book was a little Bonds, but Balco-oriented.
Yeah.
Right? With everybody involved at Balco.
Now, did you see that last night? Barry Bonds was introduced to the crowd.
I did not, but I saw it on Twitter.
Very warm reception.
Of course. I saw a whole bunch of Bonds jerseys in the crowd when they would go to the crowd.
Yeah.
They like still very beloved there.
I mean, he was sitting in those box seats just behind the, you know, behind the home plate area, you know, off to the side near the Giants dugout, and you know, he stood up, or I don't think he stood up, but he did smile and wave to everyone when he was announced or when they showed him on camera.
Man, we tend to think that like things last forever and they just don't. Right? Like we think, oh, Barry Bonds, everyone, he'll be the scorn of baseball. Nope, he won't. He's not.
Well,
after 20 years, we're like, Barry Bonds.
I mean, the Giants were always going to be warm to him. I mean, he's a god, but he's not hated.
Like,
he's not hated. You're right.
Like, I don't still feel people are angry at him. Like, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa. The bitterness is gone. We're kind of like, all right,
Now we're just mad at Sammy for, you know, the skin color changing.
Right.
Which is stupid.
But we tend to do that with people. We tend to go, we got you. You and I talked about OJ. He's not only on Twitter, they love him on Twitter, and I'm kind of like, is there a generation that kind of forgot what he did? Because he's on Twitter, and people are eating it up, loving it. All right, we'll talk some NFL coming up at hour 3 as we continue with Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.